In the shadow of Collegiate Exe's most notorious program, Jean Moreau's story unfolds like a bruise blooming across pale skin. His journey from the brutal confines of the Edgar Allan Ravens to the sun-drenched courts of USC captures a profound truth about trauma and healing. Sometimes, survival means leaving everything you thought you were behind. The Sunshine Court explores this metamorphosis with unflinching honesty, asking whether someone raised in darkness can truly learn to live in the light. Jean's story has sparked real-world conversations about athletic abuse, with several universities citing the novel in revised athletic department policies. But beneath the politics lies something more intimate, the slow, painful rebirth of a soul nearly extinguished by years of systematic cruelty. John Moreau regains consciousness in fragments, his face stitched and bruised, his body cataloging injuries. Screaming knee, flaring ankle, agonizing ribs. The unfamiliar ceiling isn't Evermore's nest. The pale paint and wide windows are wrong. When he discovers he's in South Carolina with the Palmetto State Foxes, panic overwhelms him. "I am a Moreau. I am a Raven," John repeats like a prayer, demanding to return to Evermore despite his injuries. When Nurse Abby points to his torn scalp where hair was ripped out, John's memory flashes with agonizing sensations. John's world shatters when Neil Jostin reveals he's negotiated with Ichiro Moriyama. John, Kevin, and Neil will pay 80% of their professional earnings for protection from Rico, the sadistic captain who nearly killed John. "I would rather die a raven than live as anything else," John declares, begging Kevin to end his suffering. John's desperate need to return reveals the psychology of long-term abuse, his world so thoroughly controlled that freedom feels like drowning. Sold by his father to cover gambling debts, John's exploitation mirrors collegiate sports, where student athletes generate millions while receiving only education in return. Jeremy Knox, USC Trojans captain, offers Jean a spot on the team after a hazing incident gone wrong. The Trojans' approach contrasts sharply with the Ravens, emphasizing teamwork, joy, and balance instead of ruthless perfection. During their first meeting, Jean insists on behavioral standards in his contract to protect USC's image. Jeremy responds, "We don't believe in toxicity here. We believe you can be a good sport and still be competitive," a concept so foreign to Jean that he dismisses it as naive idealism. After deliberation and a conversation with Renee about finding small miracles, Jean signs with USC. Though terrified of leaving the familiar hell of Evermore, he chooses the unknown path. These teams embody two philosophies of excellence beyond sports. How often do we accept toxic environments, believing suffering is necessary for success? The Ravens achieve perfection through fear. The Trojans pursue excellence through passion and support. Jean stands at this crossroads, unsure if he can function in a system that doesn't use pain as motivation. When Jeremy discovers Jean shirtless, he notices extensive scarring deliberately hidden beneath uniforms. At the aquatic center, Jean suffers a panic attack, revealing that water was used as a correctional tool at Evermore. Jeremy confronts Jean about enduring trauma rather than requesting accommodations. Jean insists he can't afford handicaps because their success is linked, but Jeremy prioritizes Jean's well-being over Exe. Though Jean claims this is all I am, Jeremy sees hope in Jean's recognition that his treatment was wrong. Jean's scars tell the story his words cannot, calculated abuse designed to inflict pain while remaining hidden. His resistance to accommodations stems from conditioning that weakness deserves punishment. In the Raven world, admitting limitation invited further abuse. When Jeremy learns that Wayne Berger, a former Raven striker, committed suicide during therapy, Jean processes this with detachment. Later, Jean texts Renee about Wayne's death with confused anger, questioning why Wayne couldn't endure when Jean survived worse. The Ravens' legacy extends beyond Jean to all who wore their colors. Wayne's suicide represents the program's true cost, psychological devastation continuing long after players leave. Jean's detachment isn't callousness, but a survival mechanism developed where emotional responses invited more pain. After discovering Jean's defaced notebooks, filled with violent scratches and disturbing annotations, Jeremy confronts him about his injuries. Through conversations with Kevin Day, Jeremy uncovers the horrifying truth. Riko Moriyama was Jean's primary abuser. Jean partially admits the abuse while wrapped in fear. Though acknowledging he doesn't mourn Riko's death, he immediately warns that the consequences would be catastrophic if they speak out. Jeremy agrees to protect Jean's secret, understanding that pursuing justice might destroy their developing trust and potentially endanger Jean. Even after Riko's death, Jean's persistent fear reveals the Moriyama family's enduring power. His protective instinct extends to shielding his new teammates from potentially deadly consequences, showing both his trauma and growing capacity for connection. The revelation reframes the entire Ravens program. While the institution's toxic culture enabled abuse, Riko's personal pathology drove the worst violence. His worth as the second son measured against impossible standards, his legitimacy constantly questioned. The Ravens' toxic culture spreads through the Exe community like poison, creating generational trauma that damages both individuals and communities. This web of pain leaves scars that may never fully heal. Jean's violent reaction when Jeremy is attacked reveals the truth. Beneath his manufactured numbness lies unprocessed trauma. Former Ravens carry invisible wounds, game-triggered anxiety attacks, inability to form trusting relationships, and sometimes, as with Wayne, suicide. This is how institutional abuse persists, through systems protecting powerful abusers while silencing victims. The Moriyamas take this exploitation to its logical conclusion, literal ownership of players. Haven't we all felt defined by productivity rather than humanity? Jean's story represents this dehumanization at its extreme. Many of us carry invisible scars, hidden from those around us. Jean's physical trauma merely manifests deeper psychological wounds that will take far longer to heal. At Point Doom, overlooking the Pacific, Jean contemplates reconnecting with his sister but remains hesitant, preferring to keep her safe in his fractured memories. Gazing at the horizon, he feels simultaneously small and infinite, a paradox mirroring his journey from captivity to freedom. Jean's healing unfolds through small victories, personalizing his space with postcards, establishing routines with housemates, finding solace in cooking. Each mundane activity represents profound progress for someone whose existence was previously controlled entirely. His hesitation about contacting his sister reflects the complex reality of trauma recovery. The sister he remembers exists in a carefully preserved amber of memory. Jean chooses to protect both himself and this idealized memory by keeping that door closed for now. The vastness of the ocean offers both terror and possibility, a metaphor for the freedom he's still learning to navigate. Each wave represents another chance to choose his own path. The simple act of choosing what to cook marks a radical departure from Jean's past, a tiny revolution in a life previously defined by submission.